Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. And Daniel, it's good to see you.
How are you this Monday morning, sir?
Ready and raring to go.
All right.
We're going to solve all the problems of the world and bring about peace and prosperity forever.
Before noon.
Of course, the most important thing is we're not naive and we don't believe that that's on our doorstep. But I still believe it's important you work toward those goals, because although there was never anything such as a perfect communist system, they always knew exactly what their goals were,
That's
even
right.
though they failed along the way. Same with all forms of socialism.
That's right.
So, we may not achieve what we want, but I tell you what, if we don't speak up for peace and prosperity and personal liberty, you can't hope to have any of it. And that means that everybody suffers. But I want to talk about Syria again. We've talked about it before, but it's back in the news because last week, we were a little bit excited, cautiously so, about Trump saying, hey, ISIS has been defeated. What are we doing here? And he says, I campaigned that way. I'm coming home. Well, that just stirred it up. And we even said that's what would happen. And there's been tremendous piling on Trump. But I wanted to start with, how did we ever get here? Why are we in Syria? Seems like most of my time I've ever been in politics, Syria was a non-event. It's a little country, 18 million people in a special area. But we're there. The Rubios of the world say, national security. And Graham, national security. We're there for national security, national security. And I don't remember Syria ever wanting to attack us, that they didn't attack us. But what I do remember is there was a shift in public attitude about 2011 when Obama said, Assad has to go, Assad has to go. But prior to that, I thought, of Syria as being somebody we could talk to, and I would meet people that was from Syria, you know, there were immigrants from Syria,
yeah.
and talked about it, and it wasn't like, it wasn't anything like people now are talking about Iran, you know, it was, they were able to, sort it all out. But here we have a mess over there, and we're in the mess of it, because it's, and the biggest excuse is get ISIS, they're a threat, and it's all for national security. But who's all involved now? Well, our policies now are designed maybe slightly less than a few months ago, anti-Assad.
Mm-hmm.
But now that Assad and the Russians actually won, we have to drop that issue. But there's no doubt that the animosity, including Trump, is very strong against Iran. I mean, that is a big deal, and that goes along with the wild enthusiasm that we have for Israel. Because that's their arch enemy, along with Saudi Arabia. So Russia, is there, but we've argued the case that. That might be more like us putting troops in Canada if they were invaded by the Soviet Union or something like that. But the Russians are in there. Turkey is a neighborhood there, and it's been stirred up, so they're involved. And ISIS is getting weaker and weaker. And Al-Qaeda is still around. At least they're used as an enemy that we have to deal with. But so all these people in this country of 18 million people, and things change. Why did it have to happen? So there was a time, before 2011, where actually there were overtures where we were able to, probably improve our relationships with Syria, because I think they were open to it.
Yeah, and the timeline really is interesting because it sort of follows the time that I was working for you on Capitol Hill. You know, right after 9/11, the Syrians reached out to the U.S. because we had the same enemy. Syria is a secular society. They've resisted, throughout recent history, they've resisted jihadists and religious fanatics. And so right after 9/11, they reached out to Washington. Hey, how can we help you? We have the same enemy. We want to get rid of Al-Qaeda. We want to get rid of extremists. And that was going fairly well. In fact, maybe too well, because according to some reports, we sent some terrorists over there to get tortured. But then the neocons had their way with President Bush in 2003, and we invaded Iran. And Iran was in the neocon target list, and so was Syria, and so were a few other countries. So as soon as the lies that fueled the Iraq war were successful, Syria felt itself again in the crosshairs. You're next. We're coming for you. The neocons even said so. And, you know, when I worked for you in foreign affairs on Capitol Hill, I would say late. Well, first of all, we know from WikiLeaks also that there were embassy cables in 2005 and 2006. How do we overthrow the Syrian government? So that's when the neocons really started working their way underground. But then late, say 2007 maybe, there was a real charm offensive from the Syrian government. They said, hey, we want to reach out to the U.S. They had some very capable diplomats that came up to Capitol Hill and talked to people. They invited staffers, and I participated, to assert some certain events. Let's compare notes and see how we can compromise in looking at some of our mutual enemies, Al-Qaeda. And that went on just fine. Then all of a sudden, Hillary Clinton's Arab Spring exploded, and the neocons had their full reign.
And we've been putting up with it and trying to sort it out, and it's not all that easy, because last week we were hoping and praising Trump, said what he believed, and defended himself because he said that in the campaign. We thought this was delightful. But all of a sudden, you know, the thing has just exploded.
Yeah.
And it isn't like it's just the Democrats. It's Trump's own staff, which is just horrible. And I think a good word to use about the staff is they're insubordinate.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that he puts up with this. Why doesn't he have more loyalty there? But just think of the opportunities he had. He was there. He stated on principle. He stated that in the campaign. He had the Constitution on his side. And he had the American people on his side. He had the media, of course, isn't on side. You know, Fox is not even strongly endorsed. They're at least not vitriolic against him doing that. But the American people are like this. But who's been hitting him the hardest? It's his staff that has undermined him. And now, you know, he's in limbo. And if I could do one little thing, it would probably be very little, since we don't have a couple million people that we're talking to. At least I don't know. I haven't met them all. But we could sort of give the president a little bit of encouragement. You're on the right track when you say bring the troops home. And the American people want that. And besides, he also pointed out there was a money issue. And empires end over money issues. They might not end next week or two. Because we can still print a lot of money. But ultimately, what we're doing there, whether it's Syria or any other place in the Middle East or Africa or whatever, it's all contributing to the financial crisis that is brewing.
And it really is extraordinary. Here's the president, in no uncertain terms, we are leaving Syria. Why do we want to stay there? It's just a bunch of sand. We need to come home. Iran hates ISIS even more than we do. Let them deal with this problem. And then literally, you know, a few minutes later, his whole staff says, no, that's not true. We're not doing that. You know, so first, you know, the news was a 30-day withdrawal. And then it turned into, okay, 4 months. And then on Sunday, Trump said, well, there's no timetable. And then, unbeknownst to him, it seems, and even the Washington Post said Trump doesn't seem to endorse the policy of Pompeo. And Bolton went around saying, well, no, there are some conditions that have to be met. We're not going to pull out until ISIS is completely gone. We're going to stay there to counter Iranian influence. We're going to protect the Kurds from Turkey, and we're going to reassure Israel. And so they just came out with this on their own without the president even knowing it.
And the Senate is piling on them, too. You know, we still have the Senate, but there's been a move even before the election that was, meant to show that we will stand, of course, behind Israel. But Trump has to be rebuked because he's overstepping his bound.
Yeah.
And the one place we've always protected is the president is, the commander in chief and can move the troops. He can bring the troops home, you know, and whatever. But the effort in the Senate has now turned into a big deal because Senate Bill number 1, which is considered the biggest bill of the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And number 1 is to rebuke the president because he stopped the war or wanted to stop a war. And that's how strongly they feel about it. And that'll be supported bipartisan. It's going to be supported by 90% or more of the media. And it's so tragic to think that there's such strong support to bash a president that's actually trying to stop a war.
Yeah.
But that to me is so sad that that happens. But you know who's behind it? Rubio and
Lindsey Graham.
Graham and Cotton and unfortunately, I thought somebody else I thought was maybe he's more neutral because he's a leader of the Senate. McConnell, yeah. He's a original co-sponsor of the. That's how powerful it is because they'll probably even get that bad new senator, that Mitt Romney, to join them too.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like Mitt Romney, but in this case, yeah, we need your support because if you're anti-Trump, we'll want you on the thing.
Exactly, and you know the putting these new conditions on the withdrawal and the president. I have not heard the president say. Yes, I endorse these conditions. I haven't heard of, so there's clearly an open breach that he needs to clarify. But, you know, I saw a piece earlier today from Ambassador Peter Ford, who we've had on this show. He's a former UK ambassador to Syria. He knows a little bit about that country, to put it mildly. And he's a little bit more sanguine about the whole thing. You know, we're a little bit worried that Trump is doing a 180 and what's going to happen. He's a little bit more upbeat, though. But he points out that the irony is that the very presence of the UK and US forces prevent the conditions for withdrawal from being met. The US refuses to coordinate with the Syrian government on those last vestiges of ISIS. We won't work with them to get rid of those last groups. So that means they'll always have somewhere to hide. The US keeps promising protection to the Kurds and actually even going as far as telling the Kurds, don't make a deal with Damascus, which they did over the weekend. The neocons told them, don't make a deal with Damascus. Whereas in reality, they need to make some kind of a deal, and they're looking to make a deal. They're already in negotiations, maybe some form of autonomy, which would be really a win-win scenario for them and for everyone. They're trying to prevent that. So even while they're saying, here's a timetable, as soon as we get these things done, we'll go, they're doing everything they can to prevent those from being fulfilled.
You know, sometimes I sit back and wonder how these things get so out of control. So here we have Pompeo and Bolton. Immediately on the road. Yeah. I wonder where they got their airplane tickets, you know. And what I really wonder about is something as important as this, as challenging to the core of what the president did. Do you think that Bolton and Pompeo came in and sat down with the president and they spent an hour or two on this, and they were making a suggestion, Mr. President, what we think we ought to do is cover up your mistakes and we're going to go over there and apologize and saying we're staying forever? Do you think they did that, or did they just sort of pick up and call up the Air Force and say, hey, I'm ready to go? For some reason, the way it plays out, I think that it would give the president more credibility if he was careless and didn't speak out on it. Because if he did sit down with these two guys for a couple of hours on the next plan, he might say, what are you guys talking about? You know, I'm just over there, showing the American people why we need to come home. I'm just fulfilling another one of my promises. But it just happens. It just happens. It moves along, and then the media piles on, makes it more difficult, and then the politicians. It's unfortunate that we don't have very many in either the House or the Senate that sees it in a constitutional manner. You know that they'll bend over backwards to defend these unconstitutional wars and then bash him on what he can do constitutionally. He can move the troops around. There were no wars declared. I don't need to be over there. And the Congress never said we should be there. There's no war going on, so I'm going to stop the killing.
And not only sitting down with him saying, what are you guys doing? This isn't my policy. But also saying, what are you guys doing? You're making me look foolish by openly contradicting me. And I think that's probably one of Trump's more vulnerable spots. He doesn't like being made to look foolish. He wants to be the tough guy, the guy in charge, and they make him look that way. But it does remind me of how the neocons handled George W. Bush. He was kind of a deer in the headlights on foreign policy, and they came along with their phony gravitas, you know, we're the experts, we know. Whereas if you look at them objectively, everything they've ever endorsed has been an absolute and utter failure, but they have this self-confidence, and I think they're doing the same thing to Trump, simply ignoring Trump's wishes and implementing their own policy.
And some of those same people are advising
the same
Trump,
people,
right?
Yeah,
doing the same thing. Total failure. It seems like in Washington, if you're a total failure, you might get a pretty good promotion if you're preaching the right propaganda.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is the mainstream media. I was just reading the Washington Post article. They love this. They love the fact that Bolton and the neocons are making Trump look foolish. And they're really, they're in their own way, they're underscoring Trump's statements. Well, Trump said he wanted to get out. He said he wanted to get out. You know, so they're not attacking him for wanting to get out. Now they're really amplifying that because that they know the neocons are crushing him and making him look foolish.
Well, Trump philosophically, that might be part of the problem too. We give him the benefit of the doubt, you know, in some of these things. But philosophically, he's not a non-interventionist.
Yeah.
And therefore, he can't say, well, we shouldn't be there. You know, he has a close alliance, very close, with Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And a very antagonistic, consistently so, of Iran. And he's not going to budge on that. And therefore, you know, if anybody objects to bringing the troops home of Syria, oh, that means you're anti-Israel. You know, you're not defending Israel. So he's in a bind there. So once you make that commitment, the propagandists are able to pile on, and you get hit pretty hard. And I guess he's like most human beings. They don't like to be hit too hard. So he backs off, but that is a weakness that it's surprising because he comes across exactly the opposite. You know, when you see how he came bursting out of the gates when he became a candidate,
yeah.
He was, I think, respected and made a headway because the frustrated conservatives say, hey, he's going to speak out for us. But sometimes his base can be swayed as well, and they forget about the inconsistencies.
And hopefully he can recover some of that swagger, go in there and do some firing, which would be very good.
There you go.
But I would just conclude by saying that, you know, that there's an open contradiction. Pompeo said, quote, "The counter-Iran campaign continues." President Trump said, as I said earlier, "Iran hates ISIS's guts worse than we do. Let them handle it." This is an open contradiction between the president and his subordinate. So you have insubordination there. So what is going to happen? Well, we'll keep watching and reporting. I just would like to say one other thing. We have a lot of subscribers to the Ron Paul Institute. And this is just kind of a weekly column that I write, and I give you updates on some of the conferences we have planned for the coming year, some of the different events we have. It's absolutely free. We don't sell, loan, beg, borrow, or steal your names. We keep them for ourselves. A few people got a little bit annoyed over the holidays because we sent out a couple of fundraising. We don't very often send out fundraising. So we had quite a few people unsubscribe, which is unfortunate. So we would like to bring those numbers back up. So if you're not subscribed to our updates, please subscribe. Get your friends and relatives and enemies to subscribe as well. As I say, not very often are we going to reach out, maybe an article or two a week, and some updates on what we're doing.
Very good. And, you know, I think when we run into a political and a policy problem like we are today, talking about Syria, it just makes it so difficult to solve the problem when the hole keeps getting deeper and deeper. You know, it would have been very easy back in the first part of this century and after 9/11 when Syria and Iran was offering some help. You know, why wouldn't we say keep the doors open, let's talk to these people? And Syria certainly is not wasn't considered a radical Islamic state. You know, they were more secular and there would have been no reason. But it's real hard to go back and make those corrections because the mistakes were made and it goes and goes. And then we end up with this mess that I started off with. All these countries involved in this little country, and nobody's going to give an inch. And if we have a president finally seeing that, well, you know, I think I better stick to my guns and what I campaigned on, and then he gets hit so hard. So it is difficult. It's difficult for us to come up and say, well, the easy thing is do this. Well, for me, it's still easy because the policy should be changed. Even if you can't do it in 24 hours, you can do it in a little bit longer time. And that is, we ought to just come home and stay out of the affairs, the internal affairs of these other nations. Stay out of these border disputes. And maybe if we're worried about borders and want to talk about borders, maybe it's legitimate to talk about our own borders, you know, and work out something there. But certainly defending all the borders of Africa and Central Europe and Asia, and spending all this money is hardly an answer to the mess that we have. That is the cause. Interventionism is the cause. It's sort of like in economics. Inflation is the cause of the problems in the Federal Reserve. So what do? We go to the Fed and say, print more money and inflate more and bail out everybody. This is a bailout system, in foreign policy. It's a bailout of interventionist-type foreign policy rather than saying, what is the purpose of our foreign policy? What should it be? It should be to protect liberty, our liberty, and be with friends with any country that wants to be friends and trade with as many people as they will. And believe me, that is a much better strategy for working for peace and prosperity than the mess that we have right now. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.